175 nations have agreed to develop a legally binding agreement, prompting a major step towards reducing greenhouse gas emissions from plastic production, use and disposal. Held in Ottawa, Canada from April 23rd to 29th, the last major round of negotiations will bring together the treaty's Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee to draft a global legally binding agreement by the end of 2024, according to the UN. Alicia Froon spoke with project scientist at the Benioff Ocean Science Laboratory, Neil Nathan, who's been on the sidelines of the negotiations in Ottawa.
The negotiations are still early on, but we have seen something that kind of happened with the Paris Climate Accords and the negotiations with that treaty, where rather than having core obligations, you know, universal policies and specifics that are being baked into this treaty, there is definitely a lot of movement for folks in different countries wanting to sort of go the route of national action plans or national implementation plans, essentially where a general, perhaps amorphous, perhaps slightly more concrete goal is set for where plastic pollution and waste management is in the future, but completely leaving it up to countries and individual countries to set their own measures, to set their own policies in place. And that, you know, a lot of the definition of sort of what those policies are to be left up to the countries. I would say there's clear reasons why that might be the case. One, people are obviously scared of agreeing to all the same thing in the specific language of the treaty, and it's much easier for everyone to essentially gravitate more towards national action plans. But there's also sort of, you know, equity challenges where you have certain developed countries that have typically and historically had significantly higher consumption rates, significantly higher generation of waste. And then you have developing countries which haven't been as responsible for this part of the problem and in fact have a disproportionate amount of the burden of the problem, where some of this waste is being shipped there, or the waste is washing, you know, drifting through our seas and washing up on the shores of small island developing states. And so should those countries really be held to the same standards as some of the more developed or more responsible countries? Clearly, issues like that, and this happened with the Paris Climate Accords, is that when we go the route of just national action plans and not setting, ensuring that we have key core obligations, we don't hit these targets. The sort of trying to limit global our warming to a certain number of degrees, and folks agreeing on that limit. The UNFCCC did a recent report and audit of all the national action plans and found that, you know, even if every single country executed their national action plan perfectly, we still would be over our warming limit. That I could see this treaty, in fact, failing if it does indeed go to only national action plans without core obligations.
Right. And so that's the way that it's looking at the moment. You mentioned that a lot of small island nations, and we'd like to know what the data shows and what larger countries are willing to do to step up, because like you said, it's unequal, and the waste contribution is far less in a lot of Pacific Island nations. Plastic is such a huge issue. When you think of the likes of Kiribati, Samoa, but there's actually a lot of plastic throughout the islands. And when people come to visit, they're shocked that there's no recycling systems and that there's plastic littered everywhere. And that's also going into the ocean. But then there are also almost plastic islands within the ocean too. That's a huge problem, because that's drifted from larger nations too. And so what can be said for support around plastic and helping smaller nations that don't have the funding? How can we support our Pacific nations who are actually bearing the brunt of climate change as we speak?
That's such a critical question. And I'm personally very driven by a lot of this. And I'm a marine scientist by training. I used to study coral reefs. I've spent time in the South Pacific, spent time in Palau and in Indonesia, and have, while snorkeling and diving in some of the most beautiful reefs ever, plastic bag bumps into your face or wraps around your regulator. It really truly is everywhere. And to know that a lot of this plastic is not being generated within the Pacific, within these countries, and that it's coming from abroad, and also knowing that, you know, there's such limited infrastructure to deal with a problem that is being dumped on their doorstep. That's one of the driving forces behind trying to get, you know, essential core obligations to this treaty. And so what I'd say, distribution of funding and the importance of utilizing this treaty to essentially distribute and channel finance from the global north to the global south where it is needed most, particularly for waste management infrastructure. That's one of the key things that I know lots of countries are focusing on for the treaty. And there have been some pretty interesting proposals for how to do this and how to close this financing gap. The problem is so large that it requires hundreds of billions of dollars in investment that would fund recycling infrastructure, new recycling plants. It would fund, waste management infrastructure across the entire chain, grow the associations and the capacity of waste pickers. One of the key mechanisms that's being proposed right now and is on the table, and I think also has a lot of support, is something along the lines of an international fee on plastic polymers or a premium on plastic polymers. This is a mechanism that's been proposed. It's been included in the original potential options for the treaty. And the Minderoo Foundation actually recently released a report that has modeled plastic pollution as well through, 2050. And has incorporated some of these aspects and what impact it may have. And so when you look at something like an international fee, they've modeled a relatively modest fee. So this would be $60 to $90 per ton of virgin polymer. This is a type of fee that wouldn't be levied on the countries themselves, but rather the producers. So the producers of the polymers, within the petrochemical industry would essentially they paid $60 to $90 per ton of that polymer. That alone could close the entire funding gap and, provide funds that could go into a larger fund distributed to Pacific Island countries, small island developing states, or any developing countries around the world that need assistance dealing with this infrastructure issue. It is not a lot of money. It's a very modest fee placed on the producers. And even in the case the producers fully pass on this additional cost to the consumer. I believe it would increase the price if passed on to the consumer. It's really only a 1% roughly increase in the price of the product itself. So one could argue that an increase like that is not likely to be felt by the consumer, yet could still be so powerful that it actually completely closes the funding gap required in terms of waste infrastructure, recycling infrastructure that could help us get to zero plastic pollution by 2040.
The treaty is expected to be finalized in late 2024 in Busan, Korea.